You're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Kulikin. You can read my columns in the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly. My co-host, Tovin LePan, is off today. Our guest today is Rory Reed, the former longtime Clark County Commissioner and the 2010 Democratic nominee for Governor of Nevada. He's a partner of the law firm of Lionel Sawyer and Collins, where he specializes in gaming and development. Today we'll talk about, you'll get his thoughts on politics after 18 months out of the game. Rory, thanks for being here.
Great to be here, Patrick.
We were on Hugh Jackson's show, The Agenda, last week, and Hugh went off on a rather epic 7-minute rant.
Yeah, I thought his blood pressure was going to, you know, go off the chart.
And much of it was about Democrats, and specifically Shelley Berkley, for failing to put forth a positive economic message, and instead relying on tried and true defense of Medicare and Social Security, the old age insurance programs, but not saying here's the important role the government plays in creating prosperity, and here's what we can do to get there. And then after that monologue, you said he's right, and in a way, I took that almost as a kind of confession. You ran for governor in 2010. It was an incredibly difficult year for Democrats. You faced a very strong candidate in Governor Sandoval. You weren't the only Reed on the ballot. And you wound up running a fairly safe campaign. You made no commitment either way on taxes. I'm wondering if you wish you had run with a different message.
Well, you know, if I spent all my time thinking about what went wrong in that race, I'd run out of time. You know, it's behind me, and I've tried to move on, but since you want to dredge up my former defeats, I guess I could talk about it. I think that, by and large, politicians play it safe. Yeah, and I think I did. I don't think, you know, it's hard to say, you know, that's the reason I lost. There were a lot of other factors. But, yeah, I think I tried to be innovative. You know, I had all these plans, and I think I talked about some things that, if Nevada does, it would be a better place. But I didn't, you know, try to, you know, agitate or provocate. I was, you know, trying to look like the smart guy.
But do you agree, though? I mean, talk about Democrats and a more cogent, forceful economic message. I mean, I guess we get it from the president. He came out with a jobs proposal last fall and has been banging the drum on that ever since. But do you feel like there's a positive economic message from Democrats?
Yeah, I do. You know, I mean, it's on the one hand, it all gets kind of tiresome and boring. You know, it seems like everybody's saying the same thing, and they just recycle it and say it a little bit differently, and it's predictable. And there's such a huge divide between the parties now. But, you know, I think that if you had to pick a message, I'd pick the Democrats. I mean, the Republicans are for people that don't really need much help, you know, and the Democrats are trying to do what's better for people that are in the middle or lower than the middle, and while it's predictable and becomes tiresome, it's still the place I want to be.
How would you evaluate Governor Sandoval's performance thus far during his first legislative session? He agreed to extend taxes that were set to sunset, he's a genial fellow, that's for sure. So how would you evaluate his tenure?
Well, I think the first thing is what you said last. I mean, the governor's a nice guy. Everybody likes him. Hard not to. He's got a lot better personality than you or me. At least maybe I should just speak for myself.
Yeah, really.
Yeah,
come on.
Okay, I'm sorry. And any criticism I made of him would just sound like sour grapes, so I won't do it. I think he's, so, you know, on the positive side, I think he's been pragmatic. He's found ways to compromise. He's not been as ideologically driven as a lot of the people in his party, and I think he deserves some credit for that.
You were on the county commission during a period of both intense growth and development and what seemed like never-ending prosperity, and then also
Yeah, we saw the whole cycle.
Right, the crash. Do you feel that the conversation has changed sufficiently in the wake of that crash, where people in Nevada are trying to determine what policy course to take that would create a more sustainable prosperity?
You know, I don't know if anybody remembers anything I did, but for what it's worth, I'm proud of what I did on the commission. It was a great job. I enjoyed it a lot, and I tried to, you know, be dedicated to it, while at the same time tackling some tough stuff. And the conversation really changed. When I first was elected, the conversation was all about growth and how we were going to handle it. And, you know, we didn't see it as all good. You know, there were problems with it, and we had to deal with those problems. And we had this big growth task force, and we had all these great new policies that by the time we instituted them, there was no more growth. And then we had to deal with the economic crisis. And I think we took that head on. We dealt with our employees, unions, in a way that never had occurred before. We talked about UMC honestly, and I don't know if that had ever occurred before. We said the current model wouldn't work, and that, you know, there's this effort that's still ongoing to figure that out. So I think we did a good job confronting difficult issues, and as you said, the conversation is totally different today than it was when I was elected. And it wasn't that long ago that I was elected. I'm a very young man.
You are. Yeah. The commission, tell us what your frustrations were serving on the county commission. I imagine that dealing with state government would be at the top of the list.
Yeah, and you've seen it kind of flower, that kind of animosity that exists. And, you know, it didn't matter if they were Democrats or Republicans. It was frustrating to be in local government because the state's attitude towards local government was dismissive at best. And they just saw us for what we were, a subdivision of their government. And if we had a problem, they expected us to solve it. And often they would just exacerbate the problem for us. There was no cooperation or very little.
Give us some examples.
Well, if the state had a fiscal problem, they didn't try to find a way to collaborate with us. They just looked for a bucket of money they could use. You know, the Clean Water Coalition money, there's $62 million that was sitting there. All these payers paid into a fund for a specific purpose. They just took it. You know, subsequently, the Supreme Court said they couldn't do that. And it took the judiciary to step in and, I guess, give the state government a dose of its own medicine and, frankly, give local government some courage. And because the Supreme Court finally said, you know, you can't just go taking local government money because you want it, that kind of changed everything. And now local governments are standing up to the state. The county just sued the state saying, hey, that money you took, we want it back. So, the only thing that's changed is there's a judicial ruling that gives local governments more power. But the relationship really is not good. And, you know, when I was there, I could never say that because if I poked them in the eye, they'd take more money. So, but now I'm here sitting with you. I can talk about it.
Right, and no one's listening. So
somebody
you can, we can really be open. Do you think that it's time for home rule? I'm consistently surprised at a lack of you don't hear much advocacy for home rule here in Southern Nevada, especially. I'm not sure what the political coalition would be, but and when I say home rule, what I mean by that is it's very difficult as a county commission, especially when it comes to revenue, to do anything without permission from the legislature. So talk about that a little bit.
I am and was an advocate of home rule. The problem is that the only place the county can get home rule is from the state, and they don't want to give it. They're not, you know, they don't want to give away this power that they have that I described. Mm-hmm. Nevada is one of four states that doesn't have what you're talking about. It makes absolutely no sense. The county can't do anything without state permission. You remember the whole crisis with Dr. Desai,
right.
And all that stuff.
Hepatitis C
crisis. I forgot it, the name of the disease. anyway, that whole crisis, a couple of those clinics were in the county. We had no enforcement mechanism. We couldn't even find the guy. We had no authority to do anything other than say, you know, you shouldn't have done that. And that's just ridiculous. We should have been able to swoop in there and take whatever action the local government deemed appropriate. And the county is consistently going up to the state legislature and say, hey, can we do this? Can we do that? And that just isn't how it should work. I think that local government's the government closest to the people. It's that we met every 2 weeks. They continue to meet. They're meeting tomorrow. They're meeting the next day. Home rule makes sense, except for the state legislature, because they have power that they don't want to give up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it seems like the politics of it are a little jumbled, because one would think that Republicans would favor it, because, like you said, they, you know, government that is closest to the people is the best, has generally their philosophy. They believe in federalism, at least at the with our national government. They believe
at least when it suits them.
That's correct. But generally, I think that they like the idea that if people in Mississippi get to choose how they live differently from people in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, they probably fear that would mean. It could mean higher, like if we had home rule, we might institute higher taxes for our schools. And meanwhile, Democrats, who have all these legislative seats down here, like you say, they don't like to give up power. And so they're unlikely to do that up in Carson City. What was your sense of who your allies were on that?
My sense was that I didn't have any. And I'm not saying we had a bad relationship. I mean, we had productive conversations with people at the state level, but they were conversations that they wanted to have when they wanted to have them. And a lot of the times in politics, you know, there's competing factors, and it could be about, you know, a genuine disagreement on a policy issue, or there could be issues related to what's best parochially for your particular district or something that's going on in an area that you care about. But this has nothing to do with anything but power, period. The state has it. They don't want to give it up, period. And that's bad. And it makes for a more difficulty in dealing with problems. Can I give you a good example?
Sure.
When we were on that Hugh Jackson show right before, you know, Hugh's temples burst, we were talking about the whole Affordable Care Act, and, you know, or so-called Obamacare, and what was going to happen with Medicare and Medicaid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a perfect example. The governor has to make a decision about whether it should be expanded in Nevada. And state legislators, even the Democrats, have been hesitant to talk about that. And if you talk to a county commissioner, they'd have a completely different view, because they know that if it's expanded, uncompensated care would be cut in half, and UMC's problem would be solved in many ways. But the state doesn't care about that. So there's a huge issue for the public. UMC is a huge drain on taxpayer money.
Because people go there without health insurance.
Yeah, they go there, and they get care, and we all pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
But that pain is felt in the county's budget, not in the state's primarily. And that's why the state isn't fully considering this very important issue.
Mm-hmm.
And if the county had more power, they could do something about it.
Hmm.
I feel better now. Thank you very much.
Since we're talking about health care, I don't know if you followed this conflict between the county and the health district, Southern Nevada Health District. What was your view of the health district and its sovereignty while you were at the commission?
Another good example, and I hate to pound on a theme, but when I got elected to the county commission, the board of directors of the health district was a completely different thing. It was comprised of elected officials from local governments with a couple of representatives from, I think, the medical community, maybe the public at large. It was a smaller board, and it was mostly local elected officials. The state legislature, for reasons I don't understand, probably because they wanted to appeal to a broader spectrum of political leaders, changed the board so that it had the local elected officials, the people that pay that budget, had much less influence on the board. And And I think it's for that reason that the communication between the health district and the local governments that funded it broke down, and the health district didn't care as much about what the local governments said or thought, and they became more independent and ended up with the problems you saw.
Mm-hmm. And they also put 14, the legislature had 14 members of the board, which makes it difficult to
even get a quorum for a meeting.
In close votes.
Yeah.
Now you're now doing, you're out in the private sector. Tell us what you've been up to.
Well, I went fishing in Alaska. I didn't get paid for that. Oh, you mean what am I doing for work?
Yeah.
Last week I went to Alaska with my son. I caught a bunch of fish, and that's a lot more fun than anything I'm doing. But I am a partner at Lionel Sawyer & Collins. It's the largest law firm in the state, well-respected, and I have great partners, and I'm trying to, you know, create a new practice for myself and meet my obligations there. I like to be involved in projects, you know, and to give strategic advice to people and help them get the permits they need to do what they want to do. And I'm working on some energy stuff and some gaming-related projects and other development mm-hmm. projects.
You mentioned to me the Sahara last week. Mm-hmm. That's an exciting project for the north end of the Strip, which has been struggling in recent mm-hmm. years. Tell us about that.
Well, there's a guy named Sam Nazarian who is a young guy, younger than both of us, visionary. He's been very successful in the hospitality industry. The SLS in Beverly Hills is a real fancy hotel that, you know, has received a lot of attention in the whole industry, and mm-hmm. he wants to come to Vegas and do a similar thing, which would be great for us. And he bought what was the Sahara for all those years. He's going to rebrand it, spend hundreds of millions of dollars to reconstruct it, and I'm happy to be involved.
How's that going? Was the property in decent shape to be rehabbed?
You know, I'm not in there doing the construction mm-hmm. work, but obviously for it to look like something that Sam brands, it's going to change in very significant ways. It will look very different from what it looks like today. And I think it'll be an exciting place. Mm. Great food. I've been to their place in LA, and it's just, you know, there's a lot of focus on the food and the beverage, and the you know, he runs clubs around LA. Hyatt at the Bellagio is his place. The people there are way too cool for me. I don't even know what they do, you know. I don't hang out. I just know that they're beautiful rooms, and a lot of people want to get in them and do whatever they do.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned energy projects. Tell us about that a little bit.
I still believe, I said it when I was, you know, a politician, I still believe that renewable energy is a sector that Nevada could become a leader in. And
What are the obstacles to that happening?
I don't think there are that many. I don't think there are any that can't be overcome. We have the resource, you know, more sun than we know what to do with. There's more geothermal in Nevada today than any other state in the country except for California. We have wind, we have hydro, potential for biomass. So we have the resource, you know. We don't need to go to Saudi Arabia to get the resource. It's within our borders. The problems are dealing with the approvals that are required. You know, often these projects require a lot of land. It's, and 87% of the land is owned by the federal government. So you got to deal with a bunch of bureaucracy. And then probably the primary hurdle is that you need to finance the projects. You need an agreement to sell the power, a power purchase agreement. And NV Energy isn't in that market much. And so often you have to market your product outside of the state. And that's, since renewable energy is more costly on the front end than some other sources of carbon-based, like the carbon-based model, it's hard to sell. And that's sometimes, and that's where the rub is.
Mm-hmm. And so presumably California would be the biggest consumer. we need transmission capacity.
You're right about California. They have a very aggressive renewable portfolio standard. They have an obligation to 33% of their power by 2020 or something, has to be from a renewable source. So they have to buy it. It's a huge market. So, yeah, a lot of people that want to put a renewable project in Nevada are looking at California. I think that Nevada-based generation will sell a bunch of power to California ultimately.
But that, I mean, that's not going to happen automatically, right?
No. We have to be competitive with other projects. And then there's the transmission issue, which you mentioned. There is transmission from Nevada to California in certain parts of the state. And then NV Energy and LS Power, based on a deal that involves some federal assistance, they're working on a transmission project currently that will be helpful as well.
That's the north-south line through Ely?
Mm-hmm. You know, the problem is southern and northern parts of our state are disconnected. They're two completely separate systems. And a lot of the resource that I described is in remote areas in the south, in the northern part of the state. And we got to connect the state so that we can create a system that will allow us to sell our resource to others.
And do you see that happening? There seems to me there's been the momentum on renewable energy is really kind of been lost in the last couple of years.
I think it's like anything else. The good projects will survive. What happened was everybody saw what I said, and there were dozens of projects in Nevada that were very speculative. They didn't have the financing. They found some land. You know, generally speaking, it was a developer found some land, got the permits, and began looking for a power purchase agreement, and then looked for somebody that could help them actually finance the deal. And a lot of those projects fell by the wayside.
Mm. You're listening to KUNV 91.5. This is Neon Eden. I'm your host, Patrick Kulikan. My guest today is Rory Reed, longtime county commissioner and the 2010 Democratic gubernatorial candidate. So tell us what you miss about politics not being in it anymore.
I miss very little, frankly. It's like anything. Or maybe not, you know, I don't know. It's hard to have anybody else's experience. But for me, politics was very consuming. When I was on the county commission, you know, that's supposedly a part-time job, but it's not. It takes a lot of time. And then I had a law practice of sorts. It was difficult, but I was just very busy. You know, the problems were significant, and, you know, it was hard to get away from it. You're always worried about something. And then running for governor, you know, it's a two-year project, and you're basically gone from anything else in your life for almost that entire period. And, you know, I didn't step away by choice. You know, the people voted for somebody else. But when the dust cleared, frankly, I found that it was pretty good to have a life. You know, it's nice to have a life and to have some balance. I see a lot more of my wife and my children. I have time to, you know, I didn't really have hobbies. Now I have developed some, and so I'm not complaining. I miss the problem solving. I really enjoyed being confronted with a complex problem and trying to solve it. I miss that aspect of it, but it's good to be away, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Do you foresee yourself going back?
No. And nobody believes that when I say it, but it's the truth. I just am enjoying what I'm doing, and, you know, I just don't want to be consumed again. I'm enjoying life.
Hmm. Good for you. You traveled a lot during that two-year period. What are some misperceptions that we have about the North and rural Nevada and vice versa?
Well, I'll tell you one perception that's very accurate, that there's the state's divided. I don't think that's unusual. If you're in California, Northern Californians, my daughter goes to school there, mm-hmm. their view of Southern Californians is not all that.
They're disdainful. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know that.
Although the lopsided resources in our case is fairly somewhat unique.
That is unique. I mean,
states often have a big city that sort of dominates.
That's true.
But it's so overwhelming here.
That's true. But I think Northern Nevada and Southern Nevada don't see eye to eye, and they're very different. And not that either's bad or wrong. They're just different. Northern Nevada is a much tighter community. You know, people that are there have been there for a long time. They're very loyal to Northern Nevada, and they see themselves as Northern Nevadans before they see themselves as Nevadans. Southern Nevadans, on the other hand, often are from somewhere else, and they're here until something better comes along. And they don't, you know, feel the kind of, I don't know, nationalistic fervor kind of thing that Northern Nevadans feel. And then people in rural Nevada, I think, feel disconnected from both of the urban areas, and they look for somebody that will protect their interests. So, you know, you have different sensibilities in the northern, rural, and southern parts of the state, and they're very distinct. And you know, when you're a politician running in Nevada, you go around saying how you love everybody and everybody's the same and one Nevada, all that stuff. But you know, I'm not sure anybody's heard that message.
You, I know you don't want to get into second guessing the governor and so forth, but talk about the governor has.
But you're going to ask me anyway.
I am,
because that's how you are.
Yeah, the governor has agreed to again allow the taxes that were scheduled to sunset. He's going to extend them again, mm-hmm. And he seems to have kind
something which both of us said we wouldn't do when we were running.
Sure, he seems to have boxed in Democrats a bit. I mean, I think that they would, given our paltry social spending, they'd like to see more, and they'd like to see tax reform, a tax code that's maybe broader in its base and mm-hmm. and less regressive. How should they approach this issue in the legislature? What would you do if you were a legislator?
What would I do? I think, first of all, I think the governor has to, you know, I don't fault him for doing what he's doing. If mm-hmm. he didn't agree to this.
It's the pragmatic
Yeah, it's
move.
Just, he has to do it. And he can do it while still claiming, you know, allegiance to what he promised as governor. I mean, as a candidate for governor. Because I don't think people pay that much attention to the details, frankly. And, you know, so I can understand why he's doing it. I think Democrats, you know, whatever they do, they have to continue to be what they're for, you know. They have to continue to say that our education, you know, and I think it's the truth, our education system is deficient. It just is. It's not competitive. If this were a race, we'd be losing. And we're never going to, and I said it so many times as a candidate, people are saying, or maybe nobody even knows what I said, but what I said constantly was that we'll never have this economy, this diverse economy that we talk about, and we'll never attract these jobs that we want to attract if we don't improve our education system. Because some executive, if he's considering where to move his company, he's going to consider the education system because he might have kids himself and he might worry about where his kids are going to be. Everybody's a little bit selfish that way when it comes to their kids. And second, he's going to want to make sure he has a labor force that can do what he needs done. And if he does that analysis in Nevada on both scores, he's going to say, you know, I don't want to go there. Probably. That's what he's going to say. And so it's our biggest problem. So
or
she. Thank you. So, you know, Democrats have to say that, and they have to demand that something be done about it. And they have to say something about expanding the safety net and, you know, creating a state where people want to live.
Sounds like a good message. Maybe you should run for office.
Rather go fishing, thanks.
You've been listening to KUNV 91.5 Neon Eden. My guest today has been Rory Reed, and we thank him for being here.